about you guys, but I still have yet to meet a person from Fresno who's not an alcoholic. I haven't met one yet. I don't know. All right. So without further ado, we're going to welcome Melissa to the stage now, and she's going to come share her experience, strength, and hope.
I'm Melissa. I'm an alcoholic. Not originally from Fresno, from Dallas, Texas, but I don't know if that counts. I'm not your most polished speaker. I always try to come up with a one tagline, and I never can come up with anything. So I'll do what I know best and share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Like I said, I'm from Dos Palos, which is a small little dirt plot off of 152 between, I don't know, Chowchilla and Las Vegas. I moved around a lot when I was a kid, and so I'm just going to do that little brief history of how I got to where I ended up an alcoholic. So my parents moved around a lot, and so I'm kind of really from all over the valley. I did never live here, though. That's not proper English. I never lived in Visalia, but all around this area. And so that made me different, and I was always the new girl and extremely super shy, as you can tell. And I never really fit in with any of the kids. I'm the oldest of three, and my parents, they were alcoholics and drug users themselves, so we were the new poor people all the time. So I ended up in Dos Palos the middle of my junior year, and I gravitated to where the people that were like me, or who I thought were the cool kids, which were the stoners and the drinkers. And that's just what I did. I drank, I thought, because it was cool, and because, I was a really unhappy kid, a lot of anger, and I always wanted to be somebody who I wasn't. Senior year, I met the guy. I barely graduated high school. I wasn't ever there. I have to actually put in a little time to get that diploma. But I managed to do that, and I had really high hopes of, I was going to be a news reporter, because in the fifth grade I saw this lady reporting the news from France. So in high school I took 4 years of French, and I was going to go to France, and I was going to be this news reporter, and I was going to wear power suits and have briefcase, and I was going to jet set, and I really, really believed that that was going to happen. I never did do that. I never did go to college right after high school. I just worked this little job at a liquor store where I could drink on the job and some other things in the cold storage room. And I had tried community college, but it always interfered with my schedule, which was I worked at 2, I got off at 10 or 11, and I partied till sometimes when I went back to work. And so I was not a very good student. I was not meant for college. Apparently not my jet either. And I drank in that little town for I think about 7 years, and I didn't really do anything. I was hungover a lot, and I almost got my first DUI there. And I just did that. I drank, I partied, I went to work, and I did that for a long time. But I met another guy. And so I moved up to Oakhurst, and the love of my life. And I had cleaned up my act a little bit, but I still like to drink. And I didn't work for a little while, and I thought, okay, well, I now need to go to college. I'm getting older. All my friends have moved on. They've gotten married. They're having babies, and they're getting college educations, and they're flying on my jet. So I commuted from Oakhurst to Fresno, and I went to Hills College. It's an 18-month program. I think I finished it in, 22 months because drinking got in my way. And that relationship ended, as they all did, because of drinking and using. Because I lie a lot, and I cheat a lot, and I just sneaky and devious, and I can't keep a story straight. So I moved to Sacramento because that seemed like the next logical thing to do. Because I'm used to that. You know, every 6 months my family would move. So every 2 years my biological clock says, okay, you got to go. Because that's about as long as I can hold on to a relationship without the truth coming out and then exposing my lies. And so then I move and I go get another relationship. I went to my very first AA meeting in Sacramento, I'm not really sure, like 98 or something like that, because it was recommended by the guy that I go. So I did. I got my very first AA book there with all the ladies' numbers in the back. But I didn't get the program, and I drank in between. I think I only went like 28 days, and I drank in between, and so I wasn't ready. That guy moved, and I followed him with the stipulation that I would not drink, and I really meant every time I said, oh, dear Lord, I won't drink, or crying in the shower and pleading, you know, like, I really meant that I wouldn't, but the night we moved in, you know, I'm an alcoholic, I can't not drink. I drink for everything. Like I said, I'm not a fluid or polished speaker, so I drink for everything. I drink when I'm happy, sad, mad, I mean, whatever. And I think my goal in school was drink to get drunk, and usually I succeeded in that. And I did all those things that the says in the big book. I always had a bag of pretzels, and I would do 2 beers, bag of pretzels, you know, water, 2 joints in a beer, and, you know, any combination, really. And so I had all those things, the self-help books and the praying and the pleading and the compromising and the promises, and I'm just, you know, I can't keep it together. So now I'm in the Bay Area, and I had promised this guy I wouldn't drink, and for 2 years I really just couldn't do stuff. But you know what? He's from here. And so we would come here to visit his parents, and so I did some drinking in this town with my Sonia. And I think that last week of drinking, I was here stalking him, I think. But I don't see him or any relatives, so I think we're pretty good. So he moved me to Fresno. I had an option. He said, you need to go. And I said, I'm not going to go. And I did crazy things like kick the door in, kind of violent. I don't look violent, but I did kick that door in. And just crazy stuff. So he decided that he was going to move me to Fresno. I picked Fresno because Sacramento had done too much damage. So I picked Fresno, and my sister had some kids, and I thought it would be good to be near my nephews. So the whole 5-hour trip, I just cried, you know, please take me home. And so he dropped me off in Fresno. And my sister happened to be moving. Do you guys know where Fair Meat is? No, I didn't think so. There used to be an Orange Julius on 150, on 99, and Fair Meat was like that with Fair Meat. And so my sister was moving out of the trailer home we lived in as a child and was moving to Los Palos, and so I moved into this trailer, and it was on my grandfather's acreage. He had passed away a couple years before, and they left their dog as protection for me, and so I'd commute to Fresno, and then I would come home, and I think I was trying to die or something. But I, you know, I was trying to keep it together, and this trailer, like I said, I lived in as a kid, so it was really old and beach crap, and it was really scary, and I had to manage gas money and dog food and food and cell phone, and usually that dog didn't eat very well that month. It's really hard to stand in the liquor store and know that you only have this much money and you're going through the beer aisle going, looking for the alcohol content. I don't know if you guys ever did that, but I looked for the beer with the cheapest with the most alcohol content, and I still had to feed that damn dog. They finally came and got him. I was like, whew. I just remember doing crazy things that, like just ransacking the place looking for the tiniest drop of whatever I could get my hands on. I called an ex-boyfriend for money for gas. one time during that period. I moved here the summer of 2001, and those were really, that was probably like a really low, isolating time for me. Just because of all that crazy stuff. Like, you don't, who calls an ex-boyfriend for $20? Yeah. I needed to feed that dog, I guess. So somehow I managed to get a place here in Fresno, and I was going to get sober. And so because I'm frequently calling AA late at night, I figured I might as well call during the day, because that's one of the things I used to do, is I'd call late at night and talk to the AA hotline, which is teleservice. And you guys were so patient with me, and I would just be drunk and blubbering and crying, and just, you know, I don't know how long they stayed on the phone. Sometime in October, I called AA, and I went to my first meeting at 5550 in Fresno. I think it was a Monday night. My eyes were swollen. I thought I had pink eye. I was puffy like a blowfish, and just probably, you know, like no train of thought. Kind of like now, but, you know, my eyes aren't puffy. But I really, I think I thought I had pink eye, and I think I was just that swollen from 18 beers a night plus whatever I could get my hands on after. And so I went to that meeting, and I sat in the back, and I tried to be anonymous, and I liked it, but I didn't want anybody to talk to me because I'm shy. And somebody called on me, and I thought I sounded brilliant, like I'm not the professional I used to be, and, you know, because we could recite the beer, the blood can, the slogans on it. Just really dumb stuff, because I was in a gang in high school, and we were called the Six Pack, and we were just six girls. We were just drunk and high all the time. But so I went to those meetings. I went 90 days, and I didn't get a sponsor like I heard, because I really wanted to, you know, get a good one. But I did go to these meetings. I did hang out with these people, and I went to the movies, and I was doing stuff, you know, stuff I hadn't been able to do in a really long time. But because of that, because of what I know now, I wasn't ready. And so on December, came in sometime October, I'm not really sure, about the mid to end of October. And on Christmas Eve, I was driving home to visit my family, and I bought that beer. One of the things I like to do is, to, you know, y'all have a routine, right? And then click, click, click. So I was doing that, and I think I made it to Madeira before I cracked it open, and Chachilla before I slammed it. And so I had just wasted 90 days of somebody's time. And I think you hear, like, getting sober will really mess up your drinking. So it was never really the same and is enjoyable. But I did drink for another year, and I got a new guy and a new job. Actually, I don't think I was working at that time. Because I just, I didn't like my supervisor, and so I would quit jobs because, like, if he didn't ask me to lunch, I would quit. I quit a really good job in Sacramento one time because all the girls went to lunch and nobody asked me, and so I went in the next day and I quit. And I really needed that job because just before that I had slammed my car into a telephone pole, and so my driver door didn't work, and so I was climbing inside. I really needed that job. And I taped my car window with the tape and the duct tape, and I don't know. So I went out on December 25th and, or 24th, and I ended up in a place again, like I didn't, where I didn't belong, with people I didn't need to be hanging out with. And I just kept seeking, I don't really know if I like the term lower companionship, but people that wouldn't judge me because I drank a lot or I did crazy things. And so I just found those people, you know, like when I was younger and I had the ability to go to the bar, I never wanted to be that lady. You know, don't go to the bar alone, don't be the barfly. Well, I ended up just like her. But in the end, I really just ended up at home alone in the dark drinking, or in front of even that German. So I got that new guy, and I quit work, and he took care of me, and he had a crazy mom, and she drank a lot, and I thought, yes, you know, I don't have to explain myself. I don't have to try to cover up and lie. And then he quit drinking because I guess I drank a lot and I caused chaos. And we were engaged to be married. And I really wanted to quit. I really wanted to get married. I still thought I might end up on that, you know, shit. But I couldn't do it. And so we called off the wedding like 2 weeks before. And then I had a baby, in between that. And so now I had this little kid. And so he called off the wedding. So then I had to move and get a job. And so I guess right in between that, I must have picked up the phone again and I called AA and I was going to meetings. So the book talks about, like, don't do anything drastic. Well, I had to get a job, I had to move, get a job, and then I had this baby. And, let's see, he's born in March, and so, December 25th, 2002, I went back to the program. I've been sober that long. December 25th, 2002 is my sobriety date. So, I'm pretty sure I'm going to make it, but I don't bank on that, but it will, you know, be coming up on to 11 years. And sometimes I really get angry that it could have been 12 and not 11, but it is what it is. And so I got sober and I had this baby and this job and some court stuff, and I was still kind of crazy and wide-eyed and didn't really know what to do. But this time I read that book. My story is 164 pages of the big book, and I really like the stories in the back. I really relate to the drunkalogs because that's when I got here. I wasn't like you. I was totally different. You don't know my story and you don't know what I've been through, so it doesn't apply to me. But I was taught to listen to the similarities, so I just listened to the drunkalogs because that's what I like. So I got a sponsor right away. I didn't wait. I got a sponsor. I picked somebody who had more time than me, who had worked through the steps. She had 5 years when I got here. And she was wicked. She my ass off that first year, like all the way through the steps. And she was really stringent, and you will do this. And I had heard things like, well, let me back up. Getting to the first step, like, is it me? You know, like, is my life unmanageable? I thought I was a functioning alcoholic, but people don't really quit jobs because you don't get asked to go to lunch. Because it turns out that wasn't the case. I had dreamed it up in my head. So getting past, like, the first three steps, really difficult, really soul-searching, and really gnawing. Like, I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I thought an alcoholic was 80 and homeless and male and in a brown paper bag. And other than being a female, I pretty much did all that. You know, brown paper bag, yes. I always have 32-ounce cups, but now it's full of Monster and not beer. You know, I did all that stuff. So I had heard that when you get to the fourth step, a lot of people drink, and I stayed close to the program because I didn't want that to happen. I heard it's progressive, and I didn't want that to happen. So I worked those steps, and I just did what she told me to do. I didn't know how to do anything, without drinking. I always had to be altered in some form or fashion. I couldn't pay the bills. I couldn't go to the store. I couldn't talk on the phone. I mean, I literally don't feel like I could do anything without being drunk. So I feel like I grew up in AA, and I feel like I had to relearn how to literally do everything. But she walked me through those steps, and we kind of, I don't know, amicably split. And I got a new sponsor. I've had the same sponsor ever since, and kind of reworked those steps as needed. And man, I'm not going to go the whole 40 minutes. I'm already sober. Maybe I should back up a bit. But I drank more than I've been sober, so how can I get to the whole 40 minutes? What I can tell you is that getting sober was really hard. It was, I revolted and pushed against everything that she said. I heard things like, change everything about you. And I was like, this is who I am, you know, like really rebellious and stubborn. And she was like, and where did that get you? And I was like, oh, and Jeremy asking my boyfriend for $20. You know, it didn't really get me anywhere where I thought I would get, like a college education or a job, you know, that I had, or any kind of self-respect or the ability to look in the mirror without wanting to smash my face into it. I can back up just a minute and tell you about that last drunk, because it had, I was here. That week of 2002, that week of Christmas, because I think I got, like, all those changes happened in 3 days. But I had some cash, and I got a 99, and I was like, I'm going to Sacramento. And then in Merced, I was like, or Madera, I was like, I'm going to go to Porterville. There's a reason. I have an estranged uncle who lived there who I had met, you know, 20 years later. And so I was like, he'll protect me. He'll save me. But I didn't make it to his house. Somewhere I got lost. It's foggy, and you have a lot of orchards. And somewhere in between those 3 days, I went to that boyfriend's parents' house, and I think he was there, and I was going to go in the door. Thank God I didn't, because that would have been an amends to make up. But I woke up the next morning, and I woke up in an orchard, and I didn't know where I was. And that wasn't the first time I had woke up not knowing where I was or how I'd gotten there. But I made it to the freeway, and then I said, okay, well, I'm going to go to Merced. And I checked into that $50 hotel right there on Motel Drive with my little six-pack and my little Blade and my bottle of schnapps, and then that was going to be it. I made that call to my sister, and I said my goodbyes. It was freezing. I probably spent 3 hours in the shower. But I woke up the next day, and I was like, dang it, again. But I don't know if I drank that night or not. I don't remember, but anyways. So then the next day, I announced myself as a newcomer. So that's my funny Porterville story. Because Porterville's not that far, right? Pretty close, like 30 minutes or something. I'm not sure. But there's an orchard over here, I know. Because I slept there. So back to... you know, I had the sponsor. She had 5 years. I worked the steps. I got a new sponsor. We worked the steps. And I was still willing to do, like, whatever they told me to do. Like, I really kind of felt like there had to be something else. You know, yes, my parents were young alcoholics, drug addicts, and, you know, my mom is, you know, takes medicine. And yes, my father died of alcohol drowning, and yes, my stepfather died of a heroin overdose, but I don't have to end up like that. You know, there has to be something else, and I don't know what that tug was. Was it because my granny took me to church, or was it... It wasn't me, because everything I had tried had failed miserably. And so I just hung on to the book, and I hung on to the steps, and I hung on to my home group. My home group is Village Group. And has given me some of my best resentments over the last 10 years. But I still keep going back. Getting sober is like, I don't know, being stabbed and healed repeatedly. I don't really know. It's really painful. And then when you can get past some of that, it's really good. I had heard change everything, and I didn't want to change anything. I just didn't want to drink. I just wanted to clean up. I just wanted a little self-respect. I wanted to not be a liar or a thief or, you know. But I don't know that I had planned on being here this long. And they just said, well, stop and just do what now. And so I just stayed sober like 1 hour. In the beginning, and I would scream serenity prayer in my car, and I beat on the wheel, and I bawled all the time. And at 3 years, about 3 years, I hit like a really rough patch because nothing really got better. I mean, things got better, and I put more, my cell phone quit getting shut off. I didn't have to climb out the other side of the car because I had a better car. Little things, you know. But something happened. I bought some alcohol, and I went to my little favorite place. You know, I like to drink and drive. And I park, and I blare the radio. And so I did that, and I called somebody before I did that whole tap, tap, tap. And so I picked up the phone, and I told somebody, I was drinking, and she stopped me. She's not in the program today, but somehow I am. And that sponsor who had 5 years, she's not in the program either, but somehow I am. And I don't know what it is. I don't know how we make it and how we stay, but I just know that even today, I'm usually willing to do almost what you suggest to stay sober. I'm just kidding. Yeah, I'm still willing to go to any length. I still want to get sober. That little boy has never seen me pass out and pee on the floor. Because that's how I grew up. And he'll never see me fly through a window because that's what my mom did. She flew, you know, out windows and stuff. He'll never see me with a bloody nose because, you know, sometimes guys hit. But if you're little, you can hit back. So I'm still willing to go to any length to stay sober. And I didn't drink that day. And I worked all those steps, and I didn't drink at the fourth step, and I didn't die when I told her, do you know how there's like 3 things you're taking to the grave? I told her, there's 3 things. And she didn't laugh, ridicule. She was like, okay, now go home and do this. And I was like, what? So I wasn't really judged or ridiculed in AA. I was just accepted for the crazy that I am today, and each year gets a little better. It doesn't get perfect. I think I've had more health problems than I ever had the whole drinking, and that really irritates me. I've had more teeth fall out, but I think that you're just more aware. You're just taking better care of yourself, or at least that's what I like to think. But the health problems don't stop, the money problems don't stop, the relationship problems don't stop. I've been married and divorced in AA. And then married again. And it's a totally different life. That chaos, that demon that was chasing me and wanting to smash my head in the mirror, I find if I just avoid the mirrors, I'm usually okay. But I don't have that kind of chaos. My life is as crazy as I allow it, and it's as chaotic as I allow it. And I feel like sometimes I want to run with it, and sometimes I don't. I know exactly what to do. I pick up, I call my sponsor, or I just get in the big book, or I drag people around with me to do these things. It's a whole different life. It's calmer, it's more peaceful, but it's honest and it's modern. And I'm not a I don't cheat on people, but I'm probably still a cheat, you know. If I can get it for free, I still want the bar, you know. I'm one of those. I want it all for nothing. But it's calmer, and like I said, it's honest and it's mine. I have been in service, and at 6 months, they asked you to secretary this meeting. And I did. It was really just like a social night. It's Friday, and what do? You go to meetings, and you set up, and you make coffee. But I lost the first person I knew in AA in that first year. His name was Kenny. And I'm going to tell this because I don't usually talk about Kenny. But so I secretary the Friday night meeting, and this guy would show up, and I was like freaked out. Like, he just gave me the creeps. But I started to talk to him, and he was, like, really, really nice. Well, he passed away a couple of years in sobriety, and it really, really made me think about things different, like, judgments and outside and just judging people, because he was really, really awesome, and he got really sick, and he died. And then I didn't do any service work for, like, 5 years. Sat on nothing. And that could have been that whole 3 years I wanted to drink, and life was chaotic, and the marriage and the divorce, and the kids drive me crazy, and I gotta get a new job. But something happens along the way. You keep working the steps, and you work them over. You keep going to meetings, and you just try to listen to the similarities, not the differences. And And about 4 years ago, somebody asked me to be teleservice coordinator, which I thought was so funny because now I'm in charge of the phone that I used to call late at night. And that is karma. And so what happened was I have a really strong sense of that phone needs to be answered 24/7. It's unexcusable that with the sobriety we have, that we can't manage to take a little time out of our day and answer the phone for people like me or you. And then that was a 2-year commitment, which is like a year and a half longer than I like to do anything. 2 years is a long time, one day at a time, right? And it led into another service commitment. And so, if you guys know who Billy W is, just run the other way. I'm just kidding. And so I think that has been really, I think you grow a lot when you're in service. I think you put others' needs when you're in service. I'm a really big advocate of service. I think it helps me get out of myself because I'm a little bit selfish with my time. And I will never initiate, but I will always show up when asked. And I think Bill asked me at the luau like 3 months ago, and I called him the other day, and I just was like, do you still need me to come out? Thinking it would be no, because so much time had passed, and he was like, oh, no, you still need to come. service. But like I said, I'm a really big advocate of service. I think it really does something for my soul. It makes me try to remember like what it was like and that hole you have in your soul when you get here, that void, just void of laughter, void of feelings. Like, I don't give a crap about just only myself. Like, what am I going to get out of it? You know, what are you going to do for me? In most relationships, you know, employers, friends, the guy. And I'd like to think that I'm not like that today, or less like that today. I don't know. I don't know. I think thank you for letting me come. This is the most people I've ever spoken in front of, ever. And I think it's amazing that there are so many people and so many newcomers, and everything I've heard about this meeting has just, like, your smiles and your laughter and all of the things I've heard. I just want to say thank you. This is the farthest I think I've ever driven to speak, and I think it's kind of cool that I get a little drinking here, and then I can come back, you know, 10 years later and kind of give my amends to the town, you know? So that's kind of my story. I was an alcoholic, and now I'm not. Now I'm in recovery, and my life is really different. I think I've said that 3 times now, but it's really cool to watch the transformation. I sponsor one gal, and it's neat to watch it on the other side. You know, I don't know what I look like and what that transformation looks like, but I've watched her walk through some stuff and work the steps, and slowly but surely there's that transformation, that smile, that hole gets filled. You know, in the beginning I filled mine with, you know, stuff, shoes, shirts. Now I fill it with a spiritual program with God. I know that the big book, the steps mention God, so I can mention God. I'm not here to preach my religion, but I do have a spiritual program as well. And I don't know. I wish I had some pom-poms to do something clever, but I don't. So thank you for letting me speak. And I'm a liar still because I said, I'll go all the way until 8 o'clock if you let me. But I got a little nervous, so I fast-tracked it some. But I'd like to see you guys come that way every once in a while. Friday night, Tuesday night, meet a lot of women. It's 8 to 9:30 at Holy Spirit. I don't think I've ever plugged my meetings before. but I just encourage the newcomers. There were some newcomers, and then there were some people in early sobriety. Pick your sponsors. Try to remember what it was like, and try to go to any lengths to stay sober. I needed a lot of help. I called my sponsor a lot those in that time. Turns out I can't keep going. I used to call her for the same problem, like 2 weeks in a row. And I would just nag her to death about this one problem. It was probably the guy. I don't really remember. But she was patient and she was loving. And so I just want to encourage the people to keep going back, try to get in service, and thank you.